The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
So glad to have you here this morning on Find Your Phone Friday. A little bit of open phone time as we noodle through the headlines and more. 770-5633-770-KMED. The email bill at billmeyershow.com. Of course, coming up, we have our usual Friday fun people and informative and kind of digging into stuff. Rick Manning. Of course, you know, Rick and I talk a lot about this stuff that's sort of serious as a heart attack when it comes to Americans for Limited Government, what's going on in D.C., but the D.C. swamp update. We look at the absurdity of it all, and something that I've been reading from Doug Casey. Doug Casey's a noted financier, and I wanted to run it by Rick, and this is why I wanted to run it by Rick, because he put out a long piece. Now, naturally, they try to get people to sign up for investment advice and everything else. I'm talking about Doug Casey's International Man, I think, is the website that I was reading this on. But it intrigued me because it explains a lot about what I'm seeing and what we're all seeing, I think, with and of course, some of it looks kind of chaotic right now between, you know, Doge and whipsawing back and forth. We're going to fire workers. We're going to do this. Okay, we're going to sell off the federal buildings. Okay, now we're going to take them off the market for the time being. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of this. But what Doug Casey wrote, and it intrigued me, and it's making more sense to me. You know, I'll bet listener Matt will call in because, Matt, you study this kind of stuff. I know that you'd probably appreciate this. But what Doug Casey was talking about is that we're in the process of a great reset right now, or a Trump reset of the federal government right now. And they're still trying to figure this out. But in essence, Doug Casey making the case that Donald Trump is the perfect president to be president right now because he has been very successful about reorganizing and bringing places out of bankruptcy. He's done it many times. And the main piece that Doug Casey was trying to get across is that the United States is functionally bankrupt right now by, you know, just looking at the mathematics of the situation. $36, $37 trillion in debt right now, spends more than $6 trillion a year, but only brings in $4 trillion in taxes. You know, and how long can you keep doing this? How long can you keep doing it is what Doug was talking about. And what you see with Donald Trump is that Donald needs to make the United States dollar, not the world reserve currency. And I thought it was really interesting. We've talked about how the having the reserve currency is a great privilege. And it is early in the game, and we've been, the reserve currency really ever since World War II. We were the last people left standing, in essence. So the last people left standing, we had the gold, et cetera, et cetera. And so the dollar ends up being the international reserve currency. That's the currency that everybody agrees on. However, because of that, as time goes on, the way Doug Casey explained it in his piece, and I thought it was quite fascinating. When you have the reserve currency like the United States has, your currency, your money is too valuable. Your money is too valuable, and there is no way that you can be a great exporter of goods. You can't build stuff and make stuff and sell a whole bunch of stuff to other people and get wealthy and do this and keep your people working, because nobody can afford to buy it in dollars. Nobody can afford your stuff. That's why all of our factories, through policy, through Federal Reserve currency and trade policies and everything else, that's why, you know, they send everything out to Mexico. They sent everything out to Vietnam. They sent everything out to, you know, elsewhere in order to be able to keep going, be able to be a going concern. So all you can do is import lots of stuff and run huge deficits. And that's exactly what the United States has been doing. Now, you could only do that for a while. At some point, you can't keep spending more than you take in. You just can't. And Donald Trump recognizes that that's where we are right now. And that's why there's all this focus on Doge. And also, what was most important from Doug Casey's piece was that, and there has been some open talk about it, but it hasn't gotten a lot of play. The whole idea is that Donald Trump is getting ready to reset us into a sovereign wealth fund type of thing, in which we kind of do the best things that China did. Honestly, taking a page from the China playbook. It's really interesting. I think I might just have to share this. Now, of course, he's pitching investment advisement services, and I don't know if I'm going to do that. But the case that he was making, that Donald Trump is in essence here to reorganize the United States and work us through bankruptcy, is a really interesting point of view, and it makes a lot of sense. And part of having a sovereign wealth fund means that you put the assets of the United States government to work. And I was thinking about, what would that mean for the state of Oregon and California and the West Coast? And I'm speaking about some of the assets being public land and forests, right? Think about how we treat the forest right now because of environmental policy. What do we do with that right now? Essentially, every square inch of public land around us is a burden. It's a huge burden on us because we're told you can't do anything with it. You can't harvest the timber. The enviros have it all locked up. The senators don't want to have anything done with it. And so we're going to burn these public lands to a crisp every summer, choke us with wildfire smoke, and on top of that, expect the federal government to pay lots of money for firefighters. And or the professional arsonists who will say, we'll do a little collaborative burns around the margins here, you know, the Ashland watershed, and that'll keep us safe. Which is baloney. There's really not much evidence in this. Or we're going to put fire on the landscape like the Native Americans did. We're going to burn our forest to a crisp. Right? It's kind of nonsense, but you know, these are sort of the fake things. Kind of like dudes in dresses can go inside bathrooms and be accepted as women, right? You know, that sort of nonsense that has been going in here. So essentially, what Casey is saying and his theory, and I'm going to run it by Rick because I think it's good theory. I think it makes more sense to me than anything else, is that Donald Trump is going to be involved in essentially taking us through bankruptcy and keeping us from just being completely liquidated because we're already effectively bankrupt. And Donald Trump knows it. All right? Donald Trump knows it. This has taken decades to get to this point. And you can't keep being the reserve currency because we can't keep having those trade deficits. We can't keep not making stuff. We can't keep not having people being productive. And that to be a free American means you just have the ability to take funny money and import a lot of cheap Chinese goods. And then we're all going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. We just keep doing this forever and running $2 to $3 trillion deficits each year and running up the national debt. You just can't do it. So you're looking at them trying to sell off federal court buildings here in Medford, which I guess has been put on hold, you know, is what I'm hearing. This all seems to be part of this, even though it looks kind of chaotic at this point, part of a different kind of great reset. Effectively, what we have are two arguing visions of the great reset. Now, we've talked about the great reset that the bug eaters... You know, the bug eaters like Klaus Schwab have been all about. Eat the bugs, live in the mud hut, and you will enjoy the bugs. Eat the bugs. They are very nutritional for you, and live in your climate-friendly, equitable community. This is something where the left has kind of gone all in on. This is what they want. This is the whole thing about the climate scam, everything else. It's all connected with that. And that's their vision of the reset, in which we're poor, miserable, and broke. While, of course, the elite, the oligarchy, is still able to have their shrimp fests and meat, you know, that kind of thing. And then you have Donald Trump that realizes that, yeah, we're broke right now. And so we have to put these assets to work. And we're going to have to do the great reset that way. And then you have another version of the Great Reset, which is over in Europe, the way I'm kind of interpreting world events, which is we're broke, our warfare welfare states are broke, and so we need a big world war to bail us out. That's kind of what they seem to be wanting to do. That's why I think they want to go to war with Russia against Ukraine so deeply. I kind of think that. I'm an expert on this, so that's kind of how I'm seeing it. And then I'm reading Doug Casey saying, hey, Lee, this is what we're starting to go through here. And when it happens, it's going to happen really fast. He's calling it like Trump's Great Reset. It's going to be Trump working us through bankruptcy because we're already bankrupt. And so we have to be reorganized. And to make America great again, you have to get America out of bankruptcy. And we're functionally bankrupt right now. I thought it was pretty interesting. 770-5633. I know it's kind of deep, but I just thought it was interesting. You know, yeah, hey, this is where we're going, you know. I think it explains a lot. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this? It's Friday morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
You're doing fine. It's very fascinating what you were just saying there. And as you were saying that, I'm right in the process of writing a response to an article on Lou Rockwell to the guy who wrote about the gold and Fort Knox. And I want to read two sentences I just wrote. Mm-hmm. Could money creation be managed like a public commodity with full and open books, somewhat like bridges and roads? No more theft, stealing by runaway inflation. Is there any group of honest economists currently working to make as painless as possible a transition to an honest money system? So, you know, you and I, you're in sync here.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if there's anything like that, but the one thing that I think that Doug Casey was right about is that, you know, the way it is right now, in which our main export is sending dollars around the world, right? That's what we tend to export more than anything else. And then nobody can afford to buy the stuff that we would like to make and sell to the rest of the world. So we end up making the rest of the world our manufacturing bases, which, of course, doesn't really help our own people in the grand scheme of things. We're all sitting around here fat, drunk, and stupid.
You know? Exactly. And, you know, I think the system has gone as far as it possibly can. And I think this, useless, senseless, immoral war that we've funded in Ukraine has finally broken the back of this whole fraudulent monetary system. And I think, and I listened to a talk by Sheriff Sickler a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And the idea that Jackson County is struggling to just have a functional jail system. It's on the edge of bankruptcy itself because there's not enough money to fund it. And I kept thinking over and over again, why in the world we sent $350 billion to Ukraine, but we can't even fund a functioning jail system here?
Well, yeah. And by the way I'm looking at it, you know, what's happening in Josephine County, you know, Josephine County has had to reset. It has offered buyouts for some employees because it's hitting them a lot earlier. Jackson County has higher reserves, okay? Yeah, I mean, that's and Danny Jordan, I think, along with the commissioners, have done a great job in preparing us in some ways. But, you know, and when I guess what I was going to say before I cut you loose there on that is Jackson County is probably about, I don't know, 2 to 4 years behind where Josephine County is. I mean, fiscal reality is catching up with everybody. Jackson County is better protected and better reserved than Josephine County at this point. It's larger, richer, that kind of thing.
Well, I have in my mind a whole different taxing system and a monetary system that could be worked out. I think most taxes should be collected and spent locally. It's a complete rejection of the IRS system, and that the states would, after that, give money to the federal government for its federal purposes.
For the true federal purposes, and that's why there's this talk about shutting down the Department of Education, all these other things. It's nothing that needs to be provided federally. And now, of course, that means that, in essence, we would be paying more of your money to the state, governments and the county governments, and less to the federal, and then the federal ends up shrinking. But I also think, though, that, you know, Casey's talk that Trump's reset involving the sovereign wealth fund, in which the federal assets that are currently on the book need to actually be productive and working. And, you know, I think that's wise. And because there's a lot of dead wood, no pun intended, you know.
Yeah.
In the federal system out here in Oregon, you know.
Yeah. We either solve this bankruptcy problem or, as I've often said, we need to either bust the Federal Reserve or the Federal Reserve's going to bust us. We've come to that point of there's no going back. We either
it can't be ignored. You're not going to be able to paper it over for much longer. And I think President Trump must realize that ultimately. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, he can't come out and say that. But anyway, hey, good talk. And I appreciate that, Tom. Thank you. 770-5633. Like, pretty thought provoking piece that I was reading, right? Anyway, hi, this is Bill. Good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Bill, it's Jerry.
Hi, Jerry. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard you mention Casey. I heard you a few minutes ago, but I didn't know if you were referencing an article on bankruptcy.
I was referencing Doug Casey, and he had, and you know, he's a financier, stock guy, you know, that sort of thing, money guy, and and I think his site is International Man. I think that's what he does, and they're all about. They want to make sure people have options in case things go sideways. They want people to have passports for other nations if you can. That way, you have options in case things go south wherever you happen to live. You know, that kind of thing. Plus, also a financial thing. But he was talking about how, in essence, that they're now seeing that that President Trump is really here to work the country out of bankruptcy, because even though it hasn't been declared, functionally we're already there right now.
Right. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, anybody who can add and subtract can't disagree here. And especially when you add the future obligations of what is on the federal government right now between Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. You're already functionally bankrupt. There's no way that they can tax it enough. So in other words, they have to get business going, and they have to do real business, and they have to do it pretty darn quickly. They don't have a lot of years to be able to screw around with this, Jerry. That's kind of what Doug Casey was talking about.
I totally understand and totally agree, and I am familiar with Doug Casey. I just wanted to make a quick comment, Bill.
Yeah.
You talked about over in Europe, you know, essentially they're bankrupt too, and they had to start the war with Ukraine, you know, to essentially go after, you know, to get out of the bankruptcy or whatever.
Yeah, what do bankrupt regimes usually do? They inflate the currency if they have to. If they can inflate the debt away, they'll do that. But they probably couldn't do that right now. And so the next best way of doing it is to start a splendid little war, and you wipe stuff out and you reset it that way, you know?
Right. Well, you know, I understand, and I do believe, even though it's never been talked about, that I just have a feeling that that's why we started the whole conflict with Russia. NATO and so forth started the conflict with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Russia has resources, lots of resources. It's the largest country in the world.
And what happens when you're bankrupt? You have to look for other places to loot.
Well, yeah, and you know what, Bill? Back in the 90s, they had Yeltsin that they could exploit, and I'm sure they did. And then Putin came in there and turned things around, and they didn't like that. He took away the cookie jar.
Yeah. Well, the way the American system's been working for a long time is what was the name of that book, that famous book Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Remember that book years ago?
Yes, I do.
Remember that came out? And we're talking about how the system in the Federal Reserve foreign policy kind of system was all about, we're not allowed to produce stuff here, so we have to, in essence, go to economic war against all the other countries, loot them, and then and suck them, and then put them in debt, you know, that kind of thing. And Russia wasn't going to play that game after the fall of the Soviet Union, apparently. Yeah.
Right. Right. Mm. Anyway, good point. And I will. I'm familiar with Doug Casey, and I do listen to some of his videos from time to time. So I'll check that out.
Yeah. I'll send you a link to it. I thought it was really interesting that essentially Mr. Trump is in the process. President Trump is in the process of getting a new system going, a new economic system in which sovereign wealth and there's also one of the reasons why so much gold is coming into the United States right now, including a really interesting stat that he talked about, is that someone in the United States of America has purchased so much gold over just the last few weeks here and demanded physical delivery. And in fact, it was about 10% of all the gold that we have right now in Fort Knox, reportedly. And Doug is talking about that. This is a sign when you see those kind of buys and huge buys of gold, not even worrying about what the money is, you know, or how much it costs right now, but that you just want the gold here. That's an indicator that the chess pieces are being moved internationally in the economic sense, right? And be ready. And be ready for that, okay?
Quick question, Bill, I know I'm going long here. Did Doug have an opinion on who was the purchaser?
No, he didn't. He didn't have an opinion here on this. But what he did say is that the reason why there's been this run on gold right now and why there's this big, and I think this is part of it, is that it's the only thing, it is the only asset internationally that all governments, countries, and people agree on. It's the only thing, which indicates that there is going to be a reset of the currencies of some sort, or something's going to be happening with various currencies, and that the way we think it is right now isn't the way it's going to be after a short time. That's the way he's looking at it. That's the only reason that these central banks are sucking up gold left and right. Private, big money, smart money, sucking up gold left and right. Whatever it is, they want it, and they want it in their possession, not a claim in someone's vault. You know, that kind of thing. And we have, and England's gold is moving into the United States right now. It just seems to, and they say you have to pay attention to that kind of stuff. And I thought it was just a fascinating story. And this is the stuff that is not going to be covered on network news. It just isn't going to be.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. Bill, Martin Armstrong believed that, and my intuition was too, that the United States was the purchaser of the gold.
Maybe it was.
I don't know that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
Martin Armstrong, smart cookie. He's one of the smartest financiers out there. And, you know, at this point in time, I think you got to pay attention to the opinions, not of the politicians. You can't pay attention to the opinions of the politicians. You have to pay attention to the people in the money world, because it is always about the money first and foremost. It is not about the politics of it all. It really isn't.
Exeter's Pyramid, Bill, I'll leave you with that thought. Look it up, because that explains just what you said a few minutes ago, that everybody's rushing to gold, see?
Yeah.
Because all these other things are just liabilities.
Exactly. Hey, appreciate the call, and thank you so much for that, Jerry. Jerry the Bull, 633. And I don't know if Rick will agree with me or not, but I find it fascinating that President Trump is considered the indispensable man because he knows how to work businesses through bankruptcy creatively. And that's why he's president right now, because that's what we need. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Get your team together and jump into an icy outdoor pool
and get your vehicle ready for your next adventure.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, because I don't want to see. I'm not
talking, let's go. And yet, he went to D.C. anyway, and here he is. Just a happy go-lucky, gosh, just a everything's always coming up roses sort of thing. And that's Rick Manning, president of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. Great articles on that site right now. I have to tell you that, Rick. Welcome back to the show. Good having you on.
Glad to be on. It's a glad you like them.
Yeah, and
I'm tiptoeing through the tulips.
Oh, yeah. No, I could never say that about you. Yeah, you could be quite as serious as a heart attack when the need comes, okay? Hey, I wanted to, a little bit of politics, and then I want to talk about some financial stuff that I was reading the other day, and I wanted to just run some things by you. And there was someone writing some thought-provoking pieces in the money world about President Trump that I thought were quite fascinating. But are we looking at the Democrats this week when it comes to politics is absolutely rudderless at this point? You know, when I looked at that joint address on, the other night, Tuesday night, and when you have most of the Democrats, not all of them, but most of the Democrats can't even applaud for the brain cancer survivor, you know, that kind of thing. I'm looking at a bunch of people that I think have lost their souls. And I hate to, to term it that way, but I don't know how else you describe something like this, that you hate the president that much that you can't even show some love to the people that you're always talking about how much you care about. I mean, what is your overall impression? What happened that night?
Democrats revealed who they are, and I don't think they're rudderless at all. The problem is they're full steam ahead the wrong direction, and they believe that everybody else is on the ship with them, and they haven't looked around and discovered they're marching down I Street and the band's on E Street. So they are Bruce Springsteen reference.
Yeah, of course.
But
you're on the East Coast. It's okay. You can do that. You know, the boss is still there.
They're back. They're back in USA. But anyway, there's a so that's what they're doing. They are completely, we talk about the Beltway mentality, and the Beltway mentality is real. And the Democrats are in step with the Beltway mentality. They are 100% in step with these five counties that exist around D.C. And they believe that's real. And so they're marching along with those five counties. And they don't recognize that everywhere else is looking at them like they're lunatics. And, so it's just, I'm glad they continue to reveal who they are.
Oh, absolutely. They've made it so easy to make fun of them, too. It's like we're able to use the Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. You're able to use the same stuff against them in which you just ridicule them, right? And, they're all, I think the funniest meme about the paddles when they were holding up their little, paddles the other day is someone that they were putting in there, I'm retarded.
I saw that.
I know it's cold and cruel, but it's just like, yeah, that's what we're looking at. But the thing is, though, is that there's still political power in what they're pushing, at this point in time.
The general consensus in politics is that the Democrats will be in control of the House in 2027.
Right.
And the good news is the Democrats are demonstrating that you'd have to be a moron to put them in power. They are, they're demonstrating, Trump's speech was approved 75%. 75%. That's never happens. Trump's the approval of his speech exceeds his personal approval by 25%. That never happens.
Well, it's because what he was talking about were things that were common sense. Well, he talked about common sense revolution, a revolution of common sense. And he's right about this.
And he went by starting out and setting the tone and saying, these people, no matter, I could cure cancer on the stage, and they would say, and they wouldn't applaud, and they wouldn't smile. Mm-hmm. And then the Democrats proved him right, at which point he looked like the wise man in the room, and they looked like the petulant children who weren't getting their way. And then Al Green got up and did his thing, and, it's with his gold-tipped cane or whatever that thing was. But, they have to be, even Democrat, a few of the Democrat members are sitting there, you know, kind of saying, what are we doing? Ro Khanna from California was approached by somebody in the airport after the speech. And he talked about this, so it's in the public domain. And somebody came up and said, I'm a dynamo Democrat. I vote for you guys no matter what. What are you doing? You're idiots. What are you doing? How could you not be for, and then names a bunch of stuff, or how can you be defending this stuff?
And how can you be defending the, the dude in a dress, you know, smacking the volleyball player in the head and right. giving her a concussion and calling that okay, right?
And he used the kid who the brain cancer patient.
Was that DJ? I think it was DJ. Yeah.
Used him and that heart touching moment of the Secret Service, head of Secret Service, giving him a Secret Service badge and the kid, you know, crying, and then, you know, used him as the example. He says, how do you not clap for him? And Ro Khanna said, I did. About three or four of us did. I can't tell you why everybody else didn't. When do we give away our humanity and our hearts? We have to be able to show that we still care about about people, but we disagree on the policies that are being done. But so some of the Democrats in town are shaking their head, but a vast majority of them are saying full steam ahead to crazy town. And the reason is, if you've already entered crazy town, kind of like Hotel California.
You can check in anytime you like, or you can check out, but you can't ever leave, right? That kind of thing.
You can check, you can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. Mm. So it's using music references from the 70s and 80s.
But that's all right. It's a good song. Still a great song. So, yeah. Well, here it is. So that's where we find ourselves. And Rick, there's one thing that I was talking with a professor. Professor John Ellis, and he teaches at University of California at Santa Cruz. He's been there since the mid-1960s. Great brain. He's now professor emeritus because, like I said, he's up in age, but he's still sharp as a tack. And he's one of my favorite professors to talk to. Because the one thing I disagreed with President Trump that night, though, was when he was talking about woke is dead, woke is gone, this is all gone. And I think it's going to take a lot more work to get rid of that mental illness, that crazy, which has infected the campuses and the academy and churning out the future generation. And Professor Ellis agrees with me on this. And he says, as long as you have the academy, the higher education controlled 95% by the Democratic Party, which is functionally crazy these days, nothing will change about that, and you're not going to get rid of woke. You can cut it from the federal deal, but you know the states are still afraid to do anything about it. Or if you're like Oregon, they're controlled by crazy Democrats, and they're going to keep loving it. You have any thoughts on that?
He's right, 100% right.
It's okay.
Sometimes the president's hyperbole gets ahead of the hard work necessary to actually implement what he's trying to do.
Yeah, some executive orders are not going to rip this stuff out by the roots and salt the intellectual ground they're on.
I'll give you a simple example. If you really want to advantage people who are Black, Hispanic, the like, the way you do it is you simply go based strictly on need. And you offer full scholarships to people who are a certain level, and you make very expensive scholarships to people who are not. And you will, by demographic economics, you'll be providing more opportunities in free education or very inexpensive education to people who make less money, who are disproportionately Black and Hispanic. And you'll be offering the same education, but you just, so you make income requirements in terms of goals as opposed to racial requirements. And you get close to the same effect. And you get some discrimination based on that, based on middle class and upper middle class and wealthy black kids, and similarly middle class, upper middle class, and wealthy Hispanic kids. But you end up with, at some level, a significantly the same racial mix that you were aiming for anyway. That's what they do in New York State. They don't do race. They do based on income. And they're having the same exact effect. So there's ways around every single thing you want to do. And you can call it something else. You can give it a new, different name. When global warming became stupid, they changed it to climate change. They just changed the name.
And now it's climate chaos, by the way. Climate chaos and climate emergency. That's the latest.
We're climate chaos and climate emergency. Yeah. Well, and say, yes, because we have to accelerate it, because 7 years ago, we only had 10 years left before we were point of no return. We're all going to die. But that's what they'll do. They'll rebrand the name. They'll go into hiding and they'll come back out with a different branding, and they'll push the same garbage. Mm-hmm. And the thing that, I'm going to use one company as an example, because I've had a discussion on one of my conservative message boards with a bunch of people here in town who are pretty smart by and large. And we've been fighting against this whole DEI thing for a while, and the whole ESG, the corporate investing in good rather than going for profits, also known as environmental, social, and governance policy investing. And we've been fighting that, and companies have embraced that for a while, trying to convince them to get back to neutral. And BlackRock has supposedly disavowed ESG. BlackRock was the driver
of ESG. Yeah, they're the ones that brought it up. First place,
and then you had Vanguard and a whole bunch of other and various people, organizations that vote proxies for boards, for boards of directors, and for corporate governance votes, basically making ExxonMobil become a green company for all intents and purposes.
BP too, so, things like that. Yeah.
BP, yeah, exactly. So BlackRock supposedly is dropping out of all the climate action fund and all the things they've been supporting and funding around the world. Okay. And I sit there and I go, I'll trust them. You know, I'll trust them when, you know, in 10 years, if we see that's what they're actually doing. But when somebody's that committed to it, and oh, by the way, I'll trust them when they are major investors in China. But they're now making, and all these people say, oh, we've won. It's like, no, you're wrong. They're playing us. There was a report yesterday that BlackRock is going to buy the two ports that deal with the Panama Canal.
Right.
So wresting control from the Chinese. Except for who are their main? BlackRock is so beholden and so invested in the Chinese economy
that it might as well be a Chinese company buying them. It might as well be a Chinese company just rebuying the Panama Canal ports.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And so let's just be in black. You know, when we talk BlackRock, people, it just sounds like a name. Look at how much the holdings are. They are enormous. They have holdings in the tens of trillions of dollars, and the entire world only has about $100 trillion, maybe 80, between 80 and $100 trillion in GDP. And BlackRock holds a lot of it.
Well, all you have to do is know the guy who runs it is Larry Fink. A name like Fink, right. I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, I'm careful and I'm making generalizations based on people's names.
I know.
I end up manning the helm of everything.
Okay.
I don't really want to do that. So.
All right.
I'm too lazy for the responsibility my name implies. So it's point is Reagan was very smart. He said, trust and verify.
Uh-huh.
On this ESG stuff, on the climate funding and the like, trust but verify. The wounds are too fresh of these companies, these banks, debanking conservatives, debanking people who are not funding things like new petroleum new places to refine petroleum, and instead putting all their money into windmills and buying up land for so they can drive our agriculture into the dump. And there's too much money and too many people have been committed to that bad philosophy that isn't about profit. It's about social good. And I just take me back to the days when corporations were all they wanted to do was make money, because that's what they're set up to do.
And when they make money and the rest of us are working in the companies that are making money, things are good. All right. I wanted to, before we take off here, Rick, I was talking about something earlier this morning when I first came on. And I said, I don't know what Rick would think about this, but I'm fascinated by this. And so I'm going to run it by you. I might send you the piece I was reading. Do you know who Doug Casey is? Have you ever heard of him?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. Doug Casey is an international financier. And it's International Man is his website. And, of course, they're stock advisors, everything else like that. I pay attention to the money people because I think the money people pay more attention and are, in essence, controlling politicians anyway. You know, we always focus on politicians, but you know, I think there's limited. It's always about the money. And he put wrote a piece about this that he says that, honestly, what we're witnessing right now with, you know, major gold coming into the United States right now. Someone bought, they don't know who, bought enough gold and had it delivered about 10% of what's supposedly in Fort Knox right now. So we are talking like 60-something million ounces of gold. One person ended up buying this in the United States and had it delivered. We don't know who it is.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of gold, all right? And that it's indicating that the...
By the way, there's only about 10 people who can do that, so...
Exactly.
You got a 1 in 10 chance of getting it right.
Yeah, I imagine so. But the point is, though, that the chess pieces are moving internationally, and that President Trump well understands what's going on here. And the bottom line, what they were saying, is that what we are going to be witnessing in the near future here is the reset. Now... But it's a reset that needs to happen because the way the United States is run right now with the Federal Reserve and having the reserve currency, it is not a benefit for the United States. It hasn't been for quite some time that it is a burden because you have an artificially high currency. There's no way you can stop that. You will always end up having huge trade deficits. You will not be making stuff yourself, and you're going to be running massive government deficits in order to, you know, keep people fed and clothed and things like that. And that essentially what President Trump is here to do, and they ended up going into the talk that which they've openly been talking about, sovereign wealth fund, that the idea that the United States has all these assets that are just sitting around as dead wood, including our forests out here that we burn instead of harvesting, but we bill the federal government, you know, to put out the fire, all this kind of stuff, that ultimately President Trump is here and the perfect president to be in charge right now, because it's his job to essentially work us out of bankruptcy, because we're functionally bankrupt right now, even as the Democrats scream about the possibility of selling off a federal building or two. And I thought I was intrigued, you know, by this, that President Trump has been successful bringing all sorts of organizations and businesses out of bankruptcy, and that now his job is to do that with the United States. What do you think about that?
I think it's sound. I think it's sound. This is so multifaceted. But just in terms of trade deficit, our system is designed to run a trade deficit.
You have to.
Our system is built to run a trade deficit. The entirety of the post World War II economy of the world, at least of the non-communist world, post-Cold War or pre-Cold War, was based on the United States being a donor nation, consumers, while other countries were builders and producers. And the reason for that was pretty simple. The people who put that system together wanted to rebuild the rest of the world around a capitalist model, but we were the only economy, only group that was strong enough that it remained, who hadn't been wiped out, who could then feed those capitalist economies and feed the businesses that were transferred there. And so our policy was essentially an outsourcing policy since World War II. And that all worked until the Cold War ended. And then it actually continued to work to some extent, but was faltering. And then when China entered the world stage and got permanent access to U.S. economy, which meant our manufacturing could move to a country that had the wherewithal and a plan to attract our businesses, steal their intellectual property, duplicate their intellectual property, flood the market with their goods, put those businesses out of business, and become the dominant manufacturing force in the world. And that's what China did. And now, 25 years later, we're dealing, Donald Trump tried to deal with it in 2017, 17 years later. We're dealing with the aftermath of that. And the fact is, everybody wants to talk, and this is just one of my pet peeves, everybody wants to talk about tariffs on China, how much that's going to disrupt and cause inflation, all that. It isn't going to cause 1 ounce of inflation. None. China's entire economy is dependent upon having the lowest cost goods on the market. We're the biggest consumer. We're the only ones stupid enough to have an open market, effectively. So they are sitting there and they're saying, no matter, their currency is based on ours. It will always be, they deflate their currency when they basically make their currency, always make it so they're the cheapest goods on the market in the United States.
That's right.
They control the banks. They say, hey, banks, if you made too much, you made money. You're not going to get to make money because you've got to put more money into the steel industry and subsidize the steel industry because we need to have the lowest price steel in America. That is how the world has, how China's taken advantage of the world to capture the manufacturing sector. And then, as in steel and aluminum during Trump 1, when steel and aluminum became, it was having the effect, they're having a hard time subsidizing enough, they then just sold it to China, to Canada and to Mexico. Canada and Mexico both stamped their name on it and shipped it to us. It was Chinese steel. It was just coming from Mexico and China, the advantage of the USMCA. So that was the United States, Mexico, Canada trade deal. A criminal is trying to get a gun in the left, and the ATF always talks about straw purchasers of guns. Well, Canada and Mexico were straw purchasers of aluminum and steel, and were then exporting them and selling them into the United States. And so that the U.S. steel and U.S. aluminum industry never ended up having a price advantage that would then enhance their capacity to grow and become real manufacturers again and develop the high tensile steel and aluminum that this country needs to be able to have a national industrial defense base. Mm-hmm. If we don't make the steel and the aluminum to build the stuff, we're dead in the water.
And I guess that's what I was getting at, too. Trump understands this, but the money people are seeing that this is going to require a resetting of the international financial world in which the United States is not just going to be exporting dollars any longer. You can't do it. It just can't do it.
That is exactly right.
Okay.
That is 100% correct. It's intentional. He knows what he's doing. And he's doing it. I think everybody can understand. We won World War II because we had the industrial sector, the industrial capacity of out of car manufacturing, boat making, and ship making, and like, to be able to turn out lots of airplanes and lots of tanks and lots of jeeps in a big hurry, and nobody else did. Germany did, but it all got bombed, and so they ended World War II. They didn't have that capacity anymore; it got blown up. We had that capacity, and we could outproduce everybody in the world. That is the model China's following.
And by the way, it would appear that with what Trump's event, what Trump's trying to do then is to take a page out of the China playbook, except we're going to play it now, right?
Exactly right. It's exactly right. Now, I don't know how much industrial policy he's going to engage in. His statement on the CHIPS Act about needing to get rid of it was interesting because that was industrial policy, Biden style, saying, hey, we need to make chips here, and we're going to subsidize chip making here. And Trump saying, you know, that's stupid. Let's just, TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Corporation, which is makes 97% of chips in the world, based in Taiwan, they're going to give us money to build chips here because they need to build chips here because we're going to put a tariff on them if they don't. And that's using a different incentive system, okay?
Yeah.
Rather than giving you money, we're going to make it so it's more expensive for you. And hence, you want to go to the biggest market in the world. You have to come to America. You have to build them here, and then you can build them cheap.
And we even have some car manufacturers that are talking about moving some manufacturing here, which is good.
100%.
All right.
And once again, that is all about the car manufacturers are so important. And he gets this: we need the assembly lines. Car assembly lines are assembly lines. You can put different robots and turn the robots to do different things, but we need the assembly lines to be able to not be dependent upon other people to build our war machine. And because he anticipates that at some point we're going to have to use it, and if the wars last more than 5 minutes, which means it's not nuclear, we're going to have the capacity to actually have a sustainable industrial capacity in this country. And it may not be for 20 years, but if we don't rebuild it, we are a dead country.
Yeah. Yeah, you just can't keep exporting dollars and not building things. You just can't do it, all right? Hey, Rick, out of time here, but I'm going to send you the piece I was reading, okay?
And then, I'd love to see it.
And then,
I just read a whole one on trade deficit. It was very in-depth. I'll send you that because it's a really extraordinary, and I'll put yours up on my website. You can put mine up on yours.
But I think that
I just said it was just incredibly intelligent.
Yeah, but I do think that there are more chess pieces moving around behind the scenes than we, if we're just looking at politicians, are aware of. And I think it behooves us to know and understand it.
Pay attention to Scott Bessent.
Yeah.
He may be the second smartest guy in the administration behind Trump.
Who did you say who was the smartest? I missed
Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary.
Oh, Bessent, absolutely. Well, Bessent is the one that's talking about the International Wealth Fund or the Sovereign Wealth Fund too. He did it out in the open.
Pay attention to him.
Okay.
Pay attention to him when he's smart.
All right. Well, we want to talk to smart people. That's why I talk with you. Okay. Thank you, Rick. Okay.
Thanks.
Rick Manning, President of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. All right, pretty deep dive on that. But like I said, when I started the show off this morning, it's important stuff. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.